Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette Recaps. I'm Greta Johnson.
I'm Trisha Bobita, and joining us as always is Peter Sagal.
Yeah, hi. I'm gonna, like, not have any jingles today, okay? That's great. Thank you.
Today we are recapping Office Space as our final movie from 1999. It's from Mike Judge. It stars Jennifer Aniston for some reason, and also Ron Livingston, and Gary Cole, and Ajay Naidu, and David Herman. So Peter, last week you mentioned you have seen it before.
I had, yes. I saw it, I'm going to guess, sometime in the mid-2000s, because if you did any research into this movie, you found out that it was a flop on release.
Yeah.
Nobody went and see it. And then it became this weird cult hit on video, which weirdly was the same thing that happened to Mike Judge's other big feature, Idiocracy. Idiocracy wasn't even released. They wouldn't release it. And then they put it out on video and it became this enormous cultural icon and big hit. Same thing with this movie. So I saw it after it had become a big hit.
And apparently it aired on Comedy Central a lot. And people were discovering it accidentally on Comedy Central for years. And that kind of helped its virality.
Yeah. Virality. I like it. Trisha, you had never seen it before, right?
I had never seen it before. But of course I have absorbed, you know, most of it through memes in the last decade and a half.
Isn't that weird? Because I mean, I remember many, many years ago, I saw the gangster movie Little Caesar, which was an Edward G. Robinson movie from like the 30s. And in it, as like every mobster cliche, the pinstripe suit, the hat, and it's like, oh my God, this is where it all came from.
It's the source material.
It is. It's like, like opening up the Ark of the Covenant and all these memes come out and you're like, oh.
That is kind of cool. We pulled a bunch of clips because, I mean, there's just a bunch of ridiculous stuff that happens in this movie. Let's start with what you were referencing, Peter, with your,
Hello, Peter. What's happening? We have sort of a problem here. Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out. Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah. Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just forgot. But it's not shipping out till tomorrow, so there's no problem.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
Yeah, no, I have the memo. I've got it. It's right.
Hello, Phil. What's happening?
Oh, the emotional content in that. Yeah.
Yeah, hi.
Is amazing.
I'm curious. I mean, I feel like so much about this movie comes down to this dude who just hates working. And I'm especially curious to hear what you think of that, Trisha, as a person who is like very motivated by work and like having a good mission.
Says who?
Says me right now. You know what I mean.
Oh, sorry. I just have a case of the Mondays.
Should we listen to that clip first and then you can answer?
No one in this country can ever pronounce my name right. Hey, it's not that hard. Nai-i-na-na-ja.
Yeah, well, at least your name isn't Michael Bolton.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that name.
There was nothing wrong with it until I was about 12 years old and that no-talent ass clown became famous and started winning Grammys.
Well, why don't you just go by Mike instead of Michael?
No way. Why should I change? He's the one who sucks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
A little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
I mean, there's so much happening there. I do love that the restaurant is called Tchotchke's because it's so perfect.
Much. Yes.
It's
yes.
Perfect. This movie was also the first time I had ever heard of Michael Bolton.
Really?
Yeah, totally.
Wait, so Greta, when did you see it?
I don't remember exactly when I saw it, but it was definitely, I mean, it was probably shortly after it came out on VHS, I would guess. I like early high school. I definitely hadn't seen it since like being a person who got a biweekly paycheck.
This is perhaps the most amazing thing in that clip. And again, I didn't know this till I did my usual post-viewing research. What you just heard, ladies and gentlemen, was the coining, the origin, the invention of the phrase ass clown.
Yep, it was improvised.
The Oxford English Dictionary credits that movie, that scene, for inventing the phrase ass clown, which was improvised on the set by the actor playing Michael Bolton. Isn't that amazing?
It's so good.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. It's amazing, Greta.
Okay.
Be appropriately respectful of these moments. Everybody quiet, because Peter Sagal's got
another goddamn opinion. Of the term ass clown?
You haven't coined any phrases, have you? Neither have I. He did. Show some respect.
That's what I'm saying. It's really hard to do anything original with the written language, and yet... there they did.
They did. They came up with ass clown. There's also another thing. I love. Apparently, this movie has had so much culture, like real world meaning. Everybody's heard about the red stapler that Swingline didn't make a red stapler, but then they started making one because everybody wanted one after the movie. Here's another thing. Apparently, the Tchotchke's restaurant is based on TGI Fridays. And if you had ever had the misfortune to go to TGI Fridays around this time, the servers were covered with flair. And apparently they got so much mockery after this movie came out, people walking going, oh, nice flair on you, that they stopped it. They completely gave up.
Yeah, Mike Judge has been like, this has been my gift to the world. Is like, God, I made it so that these poor waitstaff don't have to wear a million buttons anymore.
Speaking of Mike Judge, the director and writer of the movie, he plays the manager of Tchotchke's, the one who's constantly giving Jennifer Aniston a hard time about her flair under a pseudonym.
Yeah, the two things I remember distinctly from the movie, not having seen it pretty much since high school, were flair, which I oddly think about a lot, and the traffic scene at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Like really imprinted on me, especially as a person who at that point like barely could drive. And when I was driving, it was in Fairbanks, Alaska, where traffic was not a thing. So like to this day, if I'm in weird traffic in Chicago and I think about changing lanes, I think about this scene from Office Space, like for sure.
It's amazing. And that actually brings up one of the great things about this movie, which is that its observations about office life and commuting life and apartment life are really banal. I mean, like everybody knows if you're sitting in traffic and if the leather lane's moving, you get in that lane, it'll stop and the one you were in will go. Everybody knows about thin walls in apartment complexes. Everybody knows about copiers that don't work.
Or the lady next to you who's like corporate accounts.
Yes, exactly. But all of that said, it nonetheless is so delightful and funny. And instead of going, yeah, that, I knew about that, you're like, oh, yeah, that's hilarious. Thank you for noticing that. And I'm not quite sure if I can explain why that is.
Well, it's especially interesting given how well it's held up over 20 years, at least in that instance. I think there are a lot of things about this movie that do not hold up very well, including the bizarre use of soundtrack in this film. But just the mundane nature of like capitalist life, I think, is captured really excellently and is still super resonant.
Yeah. And also, maybe you guys will agree with me that we've been doing movies from the 90s and we've been doing movies now specifically from 1999. This is the first movie that really shows what life was like in 1999. Yeah. This could actually serve as a kind of time capsule for younger people. People are going to their hip new offices. People are going, you know, to their open office space with the cafes where people can gather and they got the foosball. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is what office space actually used to look like. We all had badges like that and we all sat in cubicles. Yeah, it was a hard time.
I do think it's fun to think about this sort of in the long line of workplace comedies that come after it, both some of them by Mike Judge, who created HBO's Silicon Valley, which is like, you know, basically the same comic and creative mind making something that just is set in the present again in terms of Silicon Valley. And I love that show. I adore that show. But yeah, it does just make you realize that like how lucky you are if you are somebody who gets to go to a job that doesn't feel like this, because I think this is basically what a lot of office work feels like to a lot of people who hate basically every minute of their day until they go home and they're like, well, the paycheck means I get to do one thing I like on the weekend, so I'll keep going to work tomorrow.
Unless I have to work on the weekend too. Let's listen to another clip. This, because I think it speaks to exactly what you're talking about, Trisha. This is when he goes to the therapist.
I was just about to cite this speech. It's a great speech.
It's so good.
So I was sitting in my cubicle today and I realized ever since I started working, every single day of my life has been worse than the day before it. So that means that every single day that you see me, that's on the worst day of my life.
What about today? Is today the worst day of your life?
Yeah.
Wow, that's messed up. I'm sorry.
I mean, let's be clear. He's also a real whiny baby because there's actually nothing hard about his life and he should shut up.
For sure. Well, that's partly why I was wondering how much it actually bugged you, Trisha.
Oh, I mean, I can appreciate it as a setting for comedy. But yeah, like there's not a lot of empathy for what he's going through and his approach to going through it, because it's not how I would handle a situation. And everybody I know and my family has always worked multiple jobs and really hard or really hard jobs for very little pay. So a bored software engineer is not super high on my list of people I feel sorry for.
Right.
But it's a funny movie.
It is a funny movie. And it's weird because, you know, you could describe it as a movie about, depending on your point of view, either like good problems to have or first world problems or white people problems. And you know, there's a certain kind of condescension, maybe even toward manual labor at the end, where he ends up working on the job site, you know, cleaning up actually the wreckage of his own office. And he's like, this is great, working with my hands. Mm-hmm. Check with him in 5 years when he can't move his hands anymore.
Yeah.
But at the same time, despite all that, it's still such a lovely movie because I think... I haven't seen a lot of Mike Judge's stuff. Everything I've seen, I've really liked, from even Beavis and Butthead to King of the Hill to the episodes of Silicon Valley. He has this kind of affection for everybody in the movie, even weirdly, especially Milton. And that really kind of saves it from any kind of, I guess, what you might want to call snobbery or privilege. I mean, they're all fools. They're all silly. He knows it. Their problems are silly, and yet they're very relatable problems for a lot of people, at least. And it has a kind of weird lightness to it for, you know, this kind of satire.
Well, and speaking of Milton, right, that was the character and the titular character in the work that Mike Judge did that kind of spurred this movie's creation, right? It was a 4-part set of short films, maybe, called Milton.
Yeah, he did it apparently for Saturday Night Live, yeah.
Well, and Milton being the guy who's asking for a stapler, who, like, you know, essentially, it apparently was laid off quite some time ago, but keeps showing up and is finally getting his paychecks rescinded. And
played, just to say it, by the brilliant Stephen Root.
So good. I love him.
Who's one of those actors who you can never quite pin down as to what he does, but whatever he does it brilliantly. If you're a fan of...
News Radio, that's how I know of him.
News Radio, or if you're a fan of Barry, which is my current favorite TV show, please come back for season 3, Barry. He plays a Fuchs and is brilliant in that, if you're watching that. Mm-hmm. He was a voice on King of the Hill. He's just one of those guys who deserves a lot more credit than he usually gets.
Well, and he's one of those guys, too. I mean, if you look him up on IMDb, he's got, like, I don't know, 250-some acting credits on there, which is just, like, he was
in the West Wing.
He's in everything, pretty much.
That was part of what was fun about this movie, too, is almost everyone who spoke even a single line of dialogue I recognized as somebody who had a big role in some comedy in the 20 years between when this came out and now, right? Like, the Bobs, right? One of them is famous for being on Scrubs. If you look around the room at almost every single one of the even minor character actors, I recognize from something else that they've done later on. So like this was fun for that reason too.
Right.
Speaking of the Bobs, let's listen to that clip when the Bobs being the consultants who are coming in to lay people off. Yeah, let's listen to that meeting.
I have 8 different bosses right now.
I beg your pardon?
8 bosses.
8?
8, Bob. So that means that when I make a mistake, I have 8 different people coming by to tell me about it. That's my only real motivation, is not to be hassled. That and the fear of losing my job. But you know, Bob, that'll only make someone work just hard enough not to get fired.
Would you bear with me for just a second, please?
Okay.
What if, and believe me,
this is so hypothetical,
but what if you were offered some kind of a stock option equity sharing program? Would that do anything for you?
I don't know, I guess.
Listen, I'm gonna go. It's been really nice talking to both of you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah, the pleasure's all on this side of the table, trust me.
Good luck with your layoffs, all right? I hope your firings go really well.
Okay. Excellent.
Great.
Wow.
I love that the inciting incident of the movie, the thing that gets the plot going, and it's eventually kind of forgotten, it kind of wears off.
Yeah, they just ignore it at some point.
Is this hypnosis that basically allows him to say and do whatever he's thinking,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of great.
Well, to stop caring.
He becomes completely apathetic, and that's what sets the plot. And all of a sudden, he's happy. It's like, I'm not quite sure what it means, but it's sort of a delightful thing. The thing that changes his life is he no longer cares anymore.
But he didn't really care before.
Well, he didn't care, but it stressed him out, you know?
Yeah,
it's like he didn't like it. He wasn't motivated, but it was still like a source of angst for him, right? But then once he's hypnotized, he's like, oh, I don't give a fuck.
I kind of was waiting the whole movie for somebody to snap their fingers and for it all to fall apart. Because that was the premise, right? Is that until the therapist snapped his fingers?
Yes. And they just never got around to that.
Yeah, they just never bothered snapping their fingers.
Well, and there is, I think, especially with those meeting scenes, too, and the fact that everybody finds this like slacker white guy who doesn't give a fuck to be so appealing and like obviously as management material is, you know, very like mm-hmm. great. Like, let's just fail up. Like, that's a great fantasy to help keep moving, you know?
I mean, as somebody who's had more than one boss, more than two bosses.
Mm-hmm.
Dare I say more than three bosses at a time?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That line did make me laugh pretty hard. Yeah. I have eight bosses.
The one thing, and maybe especially you, Tricia, because you're a big fan of Silicon Valley, can tell me, the one thing that's different about this movie from other Mike Judge things is that there's this typical hero, mm-hmm. The actor Ron Livingston, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's handsome, he's good looking, he looks like a movie star. His girlfriend, Jennifer Aniston, was legitimately a big star at the time. Apparently, it was her involvement that got the movie financed because she was a big star from Friends.
I was wondering about that because Friends was 5 years in at that point. Mm-hmm. So, like, she had to have...
Yeah, she was the biggest thing on TV. She was an enormous thing. I think at that time, she was still married to Brad Pitt, so she was part of the whole big couple thing.
It's so surprising that she is in this movie.
And so it's weird because most of his heroes are not stars, right? They're Hank Hill or they're that... the pathetic character on, I forget the actor who plays in the comedian, on Silicon Valley or even Beavis and Butthead. It seems as like...
Thomas Middleditch.
This is like a weird thing he had to do to get the movie made, which is to give it a good-looking star actor in the lead who's not nearly as like troubled or weird or messed up as his protagonists usually are. Because remember, the shorts that inspired this are about Milton.
Right. Mm,
that's the guy that Mike Judge is usually interested in. The loser, the fool, the slacker. He still loves those guys, but that's the guys that makes him laugh. And so in a weird way, Ron Livingston's character almost doesn't fit in the movie. You have a sense that if Mike Judge had been able to make it all he wanted, there would be no Mike, there would be no that character, no Peter. There'd just be, you guys thrilled to that thought, but there'd be no, it would just be the engineers and the losers and the fools and the frustrated guys who don't have a way out like he ends up having.
Let's listen to a voicemail. Here's Jonah.
Hey, Nerdette. It's Jonah from Chicago. The first time I saw this movie, I felt like I had to show it to my dad. For much of his career, he was a software developer. I was just finishing college and was soon going to enter the working world as a computer programmer myself. About 10 minutes into the movie, he stood up and said, "I'm sorry, I can't watch anymore. This is just too painful." I just kind of stared at him for a moment and said, "Seriously?" And he said, "You take someone who's bright and capable, you give him too many managers who have nothing to do but bother him about things that are completely inconsequential to his ability to get his job done." It was at that moment I was terrified that I was about to make a terrible career choice. Thankfully, I haven't had too many TPS cover sheets over the years. I have worked with a number of Miltons, though. Thankfully, none of them have turned out to be arsonists.
That may have been our first pre-composed voicemail. I felt like that guy worked on it for a bit. Not that it wasn't great. That was a really wonderful invocation of your father at that moment.
Yeah, there was a lot of emotion there.
Did you guys come across this, that according to at least one, I found a 20th anniversary. It's funny, one of the nice things about doing 20-year-old movies is you find 20th anniversary celebration reunion articles. Mm-hmm. And the one I found, I think it was Mike Judge, maybe Ron Livingston, who said, what's amazing is all the people who came up to them since the movie came out and said, thank you, because Office Space was the movie that taught me that I needed to give up my dumb job and go pursue what I really wanted to do. And apparently this movie has like helped people move on with their lives and taught them about following their own bliss, which is not something you'd expect watching it the first time.
I don't know, though. That actually doesn't surprise me at all, because it makes me think of like one of the big questions that's at the crux of the movie, which we actually have tape of. We'll listen to it and then we can reflect.
Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean shit up if they had $1 million.
You know what I would do if I had $1 million? I would invest half of it in low-risk mutual funds and then take the other half over to my friend Asadullah, who works in securities.
Samir, you're missing the point. The point of the exercise is that you're supposed to figure out what you would want to do. If PC load letter? What the fuck does that mean?
I love that the whole conversation is hijacked by the malfunctioning printer.
Who's the real villain of this movie?
Oh my God, absolutely.
Exactly. And apparently that actor who's playing Michael Bolton was supposed to he had more dialogue, but he was about like that point, like, come on, this is what it's really about. Mm-hmm. But apparently the thing actually malfunctioned and it really did say PC load. So we just went with it. So we never find out what his ultimate point was.
It is perfect. But yeah, I could totally see how watching this movie would make you ask yourself that question, you know?
Yeah. I also was delighted to find out that before he became a very successful maker of cartoons and TV shows and movies, Mike Judge worked as an engineer. So this was like, felt reality in his work.
Let's listen to another voicemail. This is Jennifer.
Hi, Nerdette. This is Jennifer from Chicago calling in about Office Space. The first time I saw Office Space, I was temping at an HMO, an insurance company. And that's gone down in my history as an empire of evil. So I love the movie. The only problem with the movie is that it's not a comedy. It's a documentary. all right. Thanks for giving me a chance to share my thoughts. On a personal note, Peter Sagal once complimented my Star Trek costume, and it was the highlight of my C2E2 experience. All right. Have a good one. Bye.
That was nice of you, Peter, to walk around C2E2.
Yes.
Shouting out good costumes.
I'm now curious as to what that costume was.
C2E2, I should explain, is Chicago's Comic-Con.
Yes.
By the way. Let's listen to one more voicemail. Here is Claudia.
Hi, Nerdette. This is Claudia calling from the Denver Tech Center, where I work in software engineering, which I have been doing since about the time this movie came out. I think I've seen this movie twice. I remember renting it from Blockbuster back when it first came out on VHS. However, having worked in software development for 20-some years, I have heard the entirety of this movie quoted by colleagues approximately, I'll say, 42,000 times. So I feel like I can say definitively that the only person who can make those lines about the stapler funny is Steven Root, a true national treasure. Thanks, guys. Love the recaps.
You know, it's weird because, as I mentioned when we were talking about some other movie, that I'm watching The Office for the first time, which is another workplace comedy with a...
Yeah.
And it really does, this makes The Office look like science fiction, right? Because this is a show that, I mean, this is a movie, I should say, about the absolute numbing sameness of every day. And one of the weird things about The Office is they almost never actually work.
Yeah, no work is done in the office.
No work is done. Every day it's like, oh, you know, Michael's got this crazy idea. He's going to take them to an ice rink. Or Michael's got this weird thing he's going to do and get everybody into the conference room. Or like, so they never do any work. And if you think about it, the office, Dunder Mifflin, would be an amazing place to work because every day is filled with amazing adventures and characters and comic situations that are utterly delightful. And
stories you can go home and tell your partner or your friends about.
Exactly.
I got this boss who just does all these wacky things.
Exactly. But, you know, maybe that's why this movie is so popular, because it's really what it's like. As this person said, it's a documentary about the numbing sameness of every moment.
Yeah.
It makes The Office seem like the workplace comedy version of 24, where it's just like, never a dull moment.
Exactly.
I think that speaks also to what we heard from Lisa, who's from Lake in the Hills in Illinois. Lisa said, I think the reason this movie holds up is that so much of corporate culture hasn't changed. They're still hiring management consultants, and we're still using printers that malfunction, and that printer bashing scene is still cathartic.
Let's talk about printers for a minute.
Okay.
Because I can never get a printer to work. Is it just me, or has like everything else gone like light years into the future? Like, we have these smartphones that can do things that like no computer could do 5 years ago, and yet printers are still kind of the same and still don't really work.
And let's not even talk about the snacks in the break room. I mean, my God, it's been so many years. Can't they get it?
I did have an odd moment of nostalgia for just being around humans when they had the first shot of walking into the office.
Yeah.
There's the car, there's the traffic. And I was like, oh, I don't really miss traffic. I don't really miss commuting.
No.
But then when he walks into the office and there's just like the noise of other people existing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, remember people and places. Yeah. Remember being a person in a place.
The current circumstances in which we all live does give Peter's dream to just sit home and do nothing a certain kind of
careful what you
like,
wish
like,
for
no
man.
Peter, don't wish for that, don't wish for that. What if you get it?
More on Office Space right after the break. Let's listen. We've got a couple more clips that are great. One of them is when Jennifer Aniston quits her job at Tchotchke's. I did want to point out that one of the other fast food restaurants that they refer to in this movie is called Flingers.
Yes.
Which is also a really amazing fast food restaurant name, or fast casual, I guess.
Let me ask you a question, Joanna. What do you think of a person who only does the bare minimum?
Huh, what do I think? You know what, Stan? If you want me to wear 37 pieces of flair like your pretty boy over there, Brian, why don't you just make the minimum 37 pieces of flair?
Well, I thought I remembered you saying that you wanted to express yourself.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I do. I do want to express myself. Okay, then I don't need 37 pieces of flair to do it. All right, there's my flair, okay? And this is me
middle finger.
Expressing
middle finger.
Myself, okay? There it is. I hate this job. I hate this goddamn job, and I don't need it.
One of the great jokes of the movie is that she quits her job in a classic job quitting scene, and she ends up working at another fast casual restaurant. Yes, in another dumb costume. That's what she gets. Welcome to the world of Office Space.
It is really interesting that, like, because I feel like this movie plays out some of those workplace fantasies where you get to tell your boss to, like, fuck your flair, or, like, yeah, best of luck with your layoffs. I don't really care.
Yeah.
But nobody really wins at the end of this movie.
Right.
Well, Milton wins.
Milton does.
Milton does. Milton, although I love the fact.
But he's pretty dissatisfied with, what is it? The cocktail he orders that's not the right cocktail.
Yeah, he's like, I ordered a margarita and I had no salt, and the salt came and it was very large crystals. Yeah. What's funny though is even Milton, who gets the money and escapes, and probably, by the way, set fire to the building because he says he's going to do that early on.
Yeah.
Even he ends up on this beach somewhere, and even like the server hates him. Everybody hates Milton, which isn't
poor Milton.
poor Milton. It's also, by the way, another weird thing about that clip is, like we said, the person playing the manager, Jennifer Aniston's manager, is Mike Judge. And Mike Judge did all the voices for those early shorts, including he did the voice of Milton and Beavis and Butthead. And you can almost hear it in his voice. All he needs to do is just get a little more nasal and you get Beavis.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the long pantheon of workplace comedy stuff, too, it's always funny to me to realize how it really is sort of a small handful of creators who are responsible for almost all of these things in some form and from the last 20 years, because I'm pretty sure Greg Daniels was involved early on with Mike Judge on certain things. Greg Daniels,
he worked on King of the Hill.
So he'll go on to create the American version of The Office, where Michael Schur will work with him, who will create Parks and Rec, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's just, it's a very small club of the people who are actually writing this TV and particularly this genre of workplace families and the, you know, the hijinks that ensue. But yeah, I think this movie probably inspired a lot of the things that I honestly like more than I like this, because this doesn't have as much heart as I like my workplace comedies to have, like The Office or Parks and Rec, where there's just a warmth to the characters, whereas no one in this movie really has much depth. I think Ebert said, like, you know, he's sort of drawn them in two dimensions, but it's funny to watch, or something like that, to paraphrase. And of course, that's more what's going to happen in a film than in a long-running series anyway. But
right. Although, I mean, I think that the characters come across as whole characters. They're just not redeemed to make you feel better in the way that, say, The Office does. Because if you compare the British Office to the American Office, the Ricky Gervais version to the Stephen Carell version of The Boss, the Ricky Gervais version originally is just awful. He's never redeemed. He's just this horrible, irritating monster of ego that's hilarious but cringeworthy. Mm-hmm. And the thing that makes the American Office so very, very popular is Stephen Carell's character always ends up being shown to have a good heart, who genuinely likes people as much as he wants to be liked, and so you never end up minding him.
Yeah.
And Mike Judge is like having none of that. There's no redemption for the awful boss. There's no redemption at all. These people are just fools, and I kind of like it.
Though I will say there are a lot of things about Steve Carell's character that do not age well. You know, like, he's still a deeply imperfect character.
Yes, but nonetheless, he...
But,
I
like,
mean,
he loves his... Like, he loves his office mates like they're his family. You know, like, that's what you...
Well, except Toby, or except, you know,
like
I get what you're saying, but I think there are some pretty big exceptions that are worth noting, too, I guess.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, we can do a recap of The Office, I guess.
Another listener we heard from is Maddie in Chicago, who said she loved this movie. She told us a pretty great story about how she got mugged outside a train station in Chicago, and she chased down the assailants who dropped her purse. And in that purse was her trusty VHS copy of Office Space.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
First of all, kids, don't chase your muggers. Yeah. Just let them take your stuff.
Yes.
If you have ended a mugging and you are standing and your stuff is gone, but you are okay, go the other direction.
You can get more stuff.
You can get more stuff.
Nerdette recaps how to get mugged with Peter
Safety
Seigel.
Tip. Important safety tip.
Well, so we've mentioned a couple of other workplace comedies. Have we mentioned, like, the big ones? If people are like, I liked this movie, but I could use a little more heart in my workplace comedies. What have we mentioned? We've got Silicon Valley.
You got The Office.
The Parks Office, and Parks and Rec.
West Wing, less a comedy, but still
West
a workplace.
Yeah, I think Veep also would count in that.
Mm-hmm.
30 Rock is a workplace comedy.
Yeah. See, these are, like, most of my favorite TV shows, because I really like work.
Well, I actually remember this. So on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we interviewed Tina Fey when 30 Rock came out. And I was talking to her. And I said, so 30 Rock is a show about, you know, the creation of a Saturday Night Live. And she said, it's a workplace comedy. It's a workplace comedy. She insisted on that.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding was because, according to the conventional wisdom of Hollywood, certainly at that time, shows about the entertainment industry, i.e. meta shows, fail. Workplace comedies succeed.
Yep.
And if you think about it, like, almost every sitcom is a workplace comedy. Even if it's a medical setting, The Dick Van Dyke Show was a workplace comedy.
Mary Tyler Moore.
Exactly.
Well, and all the Sorkins.
All the Sorkins are workplace comedies, which is weird because, of course, one of the workplaces that aren't, although I guess 30 Rock proves this rule. One of the workplaces that really isn't like a normal workplace is the entertainment industry. But apparently people love workplace comedies, and I guess having all grown up on them, seeing Office Space must have stood out, certainly on video into the 2000s, because it kind of told the truth about the workplace, maybe in a way that all those other workplace comedies never did. That, like, the Mary Tyler Moore Show is about people who genuinely love each other and like each other and are annoyed together at the annoying guy who they still like. I could be describing Parks and Rec as well, right?
Yep. Yep.
But this movie was like, no, work sucks. People are miserable. The best thing to do about a workplace comedy is get out of the workplace, which I guess must be part of its resonance.
Well, and I mean, it does strike me as I watch it too that, you know, in the all staff meeting scenes, just how many people there are standing around in this movie, and the idea that, you know, they're going in one by one and talking to these consultants, and then the, I'm forgetting the name of the character now, but the one who is one of the ones who gets laid off, who basically says he's there because he's a people person while screaming. Yes. He's like, I'm here because the engineers can't talk to the customers. But then it's revealed that, like, basically he literally does nothing.
Yes.
Like, he has a fax machine and a secretary who are doing all the work, and yet he's got a full-time job and a salary to do genuinely nothing. And I think as somebody who has mostly worked in newsrooms and journalism organizations that are, like, scrappily staffed at best, yes, it does boggle the mind to think that in corporate America there are people who, to themselves, feel like they're kind of getting away with just doing nothing, like just punching in and punching out at a desk. And yes, and how weird that would be. Like, that would drive me insane. I would find a way to do something else with that time, I think. But I do think it's super weird to think that there are still jobs like that, where somebody does really like an hour of data entry, but they get paid for 8 hours of work. And then they just go home and they're like, what am I doing with my life?
I will say, one thing that also made this movie interesting to watch now is that last month for Nerd At Book Club, we did a book called Can't Even, How Millennials Became the Burnout Generation. And it's a nonfiction book about, you know, millennials and burnout. I think the conclusion we all came to as we read it and talked about it was that obviously burnout is not just a millennial condition. But I think one thing that Anne Helen Peterson, the author of that book, talks about is the kind of myth that, like, we should all be doing jobs that are, like, societally meaningful, and that in a lot of ways we might be better off if we praised people who, like, did those jobs where you do just check in and check out, and, like, it's okay if you aren't having, like, the most meaningful, enriching experience ever, but you are getting a consistent paycheck and maybe a pension by the time you retire, and, like, that is of value also, you know, like, maybe you don't need, like, a super cachet amazing job.
I think this movie almost says that sort of in the end by saying, like, oh, doing manual labor is rewarding because at least you're doing something.
You're outside.
You're physically doing something.
Yes.
Whereas his office job, it's not that it's a boring job, it's that it isn't a job. Like, it's just that the company is too big and too inefficient to realize that there isn't any work for him to do. So it's one thing to, like, because, like, I come from a long line of folks who worked hard at boring things,
yes,
to get a paycheck, but they were doing, yeah, something. Like, that's the, right, weird white collar thing that's happening here, where they're literally, he's like, no, I just come in and then I just stare into space. It's not that I do a thing that's boring. It's that there's actually no work to be done. And yet he's getting a paycheck. And I think those are very different things, because I think you can feel very proud of a job well done, no matter how simple the task seems on the surface, because you've achieved it. But to have nothing to do, I think, would make you go crazy in, like, a different way.
I guess I'm not sure that he actually has nothing to do, or just that he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. But, like, that's something we just don't know, given the information we have from the movie.
Well, he has that one speech, I forget where it is in the movie, where he explains what he's supposed to be doing, which is basically fixing the Y2K bug.
Yes, yes. Which, yeah, is also super 99.
Which I appreciated, yeah, it, because one of the things I dislike about workplace comedies is, as you say, Tricia, people are doing things all day. And it's actually kind of interesting. Well, how do you spend your time? What is the task that you do? And I'm actually always interested in, too many workplace comedies never explain what it is they actually do. Like, I'm like Dunder Mifflin. Who are they selling paper to? And how do they do it? And what are they all doing as they sit there? And I appreciated the fact that at one point he says, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right. So we've got one more voicemail, which I think is a really nice note to end on. So before we get to it, are there any other notions from Office Space that y'all want to get to before we listen to Nikki?
I don't think so. Let's listen to Nikki. Let's let Nikki close it out.
All right.
Hi, this is Nikki from Los Angeles, and I'm calling to thank you guys. I'm an English teacher here in LA, and one of the classes I teach is AP Literature and Composition with a bunch of wonderful seniors. And I've listened to you for a long time, and it occurred to me that in this world of distance learning, how we needed to end our semester was by having them create their own podcasts in the style of Nerdette recaps. And so that is what they're doing. In December, they will, in groups, they will be recapping Othello, which we have been reading and watching. And I want to thank you so much as an English teacher, because listening to you, I hope, will help them realize that discussing literature and art can be fun and engaging and doesn't have to be hard and esoteric.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Isn't that wild?
That's like us. That's like Mike Judge getting rid of Flair. Like, we accidentally did some good.
I know. Like, who knew? We'd have this. I just want to know, what does in the style of this show mean? Like, two nice people and an asshole? What does this mean? I'm not identifying who's who, by the way.
I know. It's also like, will the children be cursing? I have a lot of questions. Like, how do you use clips for Othello?
Yeah.
And do you jingle Shakespeare whenever he's being particularly...
I sure hope so. I guess we should send Nikki the jingles, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Well, wait a minute. I don't know if they're applicable if I'm not around, but good luck.
Blah, 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 whatever. Peter, nobody cares.
Right. So how do you take that and apply it to a different context is what I'm saying.
Well, maybe they just sub over Shakespeare instead of Peter, like in very poorly dubbed. You could do that, right?
Shakespeare, nobody. Yeah, I could work, I guess.
If Shakespeare's
opinion falls in the forest, does anybody give a shit? Nobody cares, but it never really stops him.
It's Shakespeare.
Still fucking talking.
Yeah, exactly. I do hope Nikki sends us some audio files so that we can hear them.
Yes, absolutely.
Me too. Well, and also, Peter, if you have any Othello opinions, I'm sure she'd love them. You could send them over.
Ooh, okay.
Then they could jingle those. It all works. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the final installment of our 99 recaps. Thanks to both of you for doing this. It is always fun to hang with y'all, and I wish you happy holidays and like best of luck as we get through the rest of 2020, huh?
I know. Maybe someday we'll see each other again.
Maybe someday we'll see each other again. Who can really say?
I know. Have we talked about if and when we're going to do anything next?
We haven't, no. So I guess we'll just see how the year closes out and kind of go from there.
Absolutely.
The show is produced by me, along with Justin Bull and Isabel Carter. Our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak, and our theme music is composed, as always, by the amazing Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music. Hang in, take care, and yeah, thanks you two. You're the best.
Thank you, Greta. You're the best. No, you're the best, Greta.
And Stannis is the worst.
Throwback!
All right, later, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.